Hello, North South Connection podcast listener. This is Chad Campbell with the second episode of The Fighting Spirit of 06. Thank you very much for all the great feedback you left for my first episode looking at the 1-2-2006 Raw. Before we start the show, I want to give a quick plug to all the other great podcasts on the North South Connection Network. We're really churning along and providing you guys a lot of great content in these corona times. We have my podcast, Carolina Dreaming, Fighting Spirit of 06, and then the Wrestling War Zone that I do with Justin. Justin also has the Extreme Three-Way Dance and Jeff Learns Wrestling and No Holds Barred that he does with Aaron George. That flows right into Aaron George, who's been an animal and is releasing all sorts of content. So he has No Holds Barred. He has The Year That Was, which is an interesting concept where he's ranking all the pay-per-view years in WWE history, started at the very bottom, which was 1995 and 2010, and working his way upwards. And then he also has a podcast that he does with his friend Reg called From Memphis to Montreal. And then in addition to all that content, we also have Jacob Williams doing the Ruthlessly Aggression podcast that is looking at the Ruthless Aggression era of WWE, starting with the draft in 2002. So tons of shows. Please give us a like, subscribe, a review really helps us out. And just thank you again for all the great comments and feedback we've received so far. Now, as we get into the show here today proper, I need to kind of give an overview and basically lay the groundwork of what we're going to do going forward with this podcast, because it's kind of took a lot of twists and turns. So I did my first Raw review, and that was about the right length of I want one of these shows at around 30 minutes. I want them to be in Pod Blast bite-sized format. Unfortunately, for what I was wanting to do with the scope of this series overall and looking at most of the major factors of U.S. wrestling in the year, it was just going to be too much. Just in this first week along, my other thought was I could do a weekly series. So I was like, well, okay, so let's look at the first week alone. We have a Raw, we have a SmackDown, we have one PWG show, we have an Impact, and then we have the pay-per-view. That's not too bad, but I went to record that, and I was over 2.5 hours long of just me talking about those shows in that week, and this was be what I consider a light week. For instance, the next week, the second week in January, has a Ring of Honor show, a CCW show, a TNA pay-per-view, an IWA Mid-South show, in addition to Raw and SmackDown. So it kind of just ballooned on me overall. So what we're going to do going forward is each episode of this podcast is going to be 1 week in 2006, so this will be the first week of January, January 1st through January 8th. We're going to go Sunday to Sunday here, and it'll cover everything WWE related, so Raw, SmackDown, and any pay-per-views. It'll cover TNA, so Impact, and any pay-per-views TNA has. And then I wanted to include one indie, and I think the biggest indie for sure around that point in time was Ring of Honor, so I will be covering the Ring of Honor shows in addition. I'll probably be dropping some little nuggets if you want to seek out some of the PWG stuff I watch, or some of the Chikara stuff I watch, or IWA Mid-South. I'll give some recommendations for those, but I won't be going through those shows in proper format. So now that we got that out of the way, let's go ahead and start with SmackDown. This was on January 6, 2006 is when it aired, and we start the show off right away with a big brawl between JBL and Matt Hardy. You know, your standard brawl, going through the ringside area. JBL goes through the announce table right away. Taz is flabbergasted at that, saying they're not even 10 minutes into the show. Hardy remains on the attack with a plancha and then gets a ladder. The limo is used as the weapon. I thought it was a nice touch, the driver's still in the limo. I enjoyed that. And then the finish comes where Hardy has the ladder resurrected near the limo in the entranceway. He goes for the leg drop off the ladder, but Jillian Hall topples him off, and then he takes a bump onto the limo after a trash can shot from JBL. JBL gets the pin with that. So pretty fun blunder brawl to start the SmackDown of 2006. I gave it 2.5 stars. But probably the biggest development of the match happens afterwards, where the limo starts smoking the red smoke, and who should emerge from that? But of course, the boogeyman. Boogeyman stalks JBL and Jillian Hall. They try to escape through the crowd, but Boogeyman catches up to him and ends up putting worms down Jillian Hall's panties. So quite a great storyline there between Boogeyman and JBL. Next, we get a squash match of Mark Henry. Mark Henry was really coming into his own in 2006. I know there's kind of a lot of back and forth debate over how great Mark Henry was in 2006. I'm interested to watch that from the SmackDown perspective, but he did look extremely impressive in this squash match here. Robbie E was actually one of the job guys that does the squash duty here, and we also learned during this match probably the biggest storyline happening right now on the SmackDown side is Melina is suing Batista for sexual harassment. So that was a big angle that was brewing over with Melina and Eminem versus Batista. So we get that. That squash is out of the way, and then that leads us right into our next match, and Mr. Kennedy joins us for commentary, and he was atrocious. Absolutely awful. I think he really, I mean, he's somebody that's certainly, of course, out of favor. But man, he did not hold up at all listening to it in 2020 years, back in 2006 time. So, he is the commentator for this cruiserweight match between Kid Cash and Juventud Guerrero. This will actually be our last appearance of Juventud Guerrero. He got fired, I think the day after, or actually the day before the show even aired. So on the Thursday, got himself canned from WWE. He was in a lot of trouble, a lot of backstage shenanigans. So no surprise there for Juve. But he goes out having a really decent match. Juve hits a nasty senton, elbow on the table. Cash goes over and starts working over the leg. Now he starts working over the right leg, which I thought was a little unconventional. You know, traditional U.S. wrestling is the left leg's worked over, so that was a little bit of a mess when it creates a logic gap where Hoovy starts selling the left leg at one point. But it goes back and forth. Kennedy on commentary keeps talking about the ratings as he's like the representative of the network. He basically seems to be doing like a Cyrus ECW 1999 type gimmick, and again, it's just not working at all. Cash catches Hoovy in the Boston Crab on the left leg now, and we basically change our strategies and we're on the same page. But some good back and forth in the finish. Hoovy goes for the 450, wipes out, and took a nasty bump off that, and then Cash is able to hit the brainbuster and win. So the leg miscue hurts it a little bit and probably prevents it from being what I classify as a good match, but it was entertaining enough for TV fodder, and we bid adieu to Hoovy with a 2.75-star match. Throughout the show in the back, you had a lot of Orlando Jordan and Booker T interactions. Booker T is hurt, and while he's in the midst of his Best of Seven series with Chris Benoit, he's got Randy Orton subbing from him tonight, and just a lot of kind of setting the table for their big match tonight. Then we get a Batista interview. Batista does a press conference with a ton of annoying camera flashes, making noise, and all sorts of just reporters in quotation marks trying to get the big quote from Big Dave. So Batista says he's innocent of all charges. He does admit that him and Melina were intimate, but she never said no or to stop. He doesn't know why Melina has trumped up the charges, and then Mark Henry ends up comes barging into the press conference, asks what his malfunction is, and Batista says this is neither the time or the place, or less he wants it to be. So again, setting up what was to be The Royal Rumble SmackDown side main event of Batista defending his championship against Mark Henry, but stay tuned for that. Come back from break, and it's time for our Randy Orton versus Chris Benoit match in the Best of Seven series. Booker T's out on commentary. Benoit starts out hot. Taz tries to give the chair to Charmel, but fails at doing so. Charmel ends up tripping Benoit with the crutch, and Nick Patrick, your referee, contemplates DQing her but decides against us. Orton's pissed at that, as he doesn't want Booker T costing him the match. And then Charmel is sent to the back, and Booker T freaks out on commentary. He was a lot better than Kennedy on commentary, by the way, as he starts yelling that he needs that crutch. They circle around. Randy hits a good thumb in the eye and drop kick, and then Orton slows things down with a chin lock, but he does have it locked on tightly tonight, so it's not as boring as some Randy Orton chin locks can be. Benoit hits a nasty reverse German suplex, misses a charge in the corner, spills the outside as we head to break. Come back from break, Orton's in control. Benoit breaks free, hits the Three Amigos, diving headbutt connects, but it takes a bit for Benoit to go for the pin, and Orton's able to kick out. Booker T's just losing it on commentary. He's living and dying on every near fall. Benoit goes for the sharpshooter. We have a nice struggle over that. Then he switches to the crossface, and Orton fights out of that. And then out comes OJ, Orlando Jordan. He comes out and attacks Booker T, and then he attacks Benoit, and that gives Benoit the DQ win. Orton's pissed at that. Booker's pissed at that. And we got a lot going on. This is a neat little mid-card feud. Something as simple as a best of seven series, but it really seemed like it had a lot of stakes. It could have been really derailed, I think, with Booker T getting injured. But I liked what they did inserting Orton into the fold here. And overall, I thought this was definitely a good, rock-solid TV match. 3.25 stars. Then we get a vignette from Finlay. He's coming in, and of course, as we all know, he loves to fight. That sets us up for the main event, and again, a big main event. It's Eminem versus Batista and Rey in a cage. Pretty good start for SmackDown. I don't think they really held back here to start the year. Another big TV main event. Similar to what we had with Angle and Cena on Raw. So a hot start with Rey and Batista on top. Eminem tried to escape, but they get caught as we go to break. Back from break, and Batista is just kicking ass in this match. He was violent. He was vicious. I thought he looked really good throughout, and him and Rey are a great complement for each other as a tag team. Big bumps from Eminem into the cage. They were also bumping like crazy. They were trying to get themselves over being in a big program. You could tell they were kind of going all out, and they delivered. Eminem tries to escape again, gets caught. Rey does an awesome bulldog leg drop combo from the top rope to both members of Eminem, but then he takes a nasty backdrop into the cage, and Batista is now on his own versus both members in Eminem. The number games catches up. Nitro hits a missile drop kick, and now they're on offense. And I thought this was very nasty as they do a double catapult, putting Rey right into the cage. Rey gets a hot hope spot with his boot up and a crucifix pin for two, but that's short-lived. And Rey goes to the top of the cage and hits a crossbody on Mercury as he pushes Nitro away so he can take the brunt of the blow, but that allows Nitro to break up the pin, so I thought that was another really smart spot. And then Eminem catches Rey with the wheelbarrow slam, puts him back into the cage. Now Batista's recovered. He does his Hulk up. Eminem escapes, and Batista bombs Nitro, but Mercury's able to grab his hand. Batista crotches both on the top rope, sends both into the cage, and Batista's going for the Batista bomb again, and out comes Mark Henry. Mark Henry shakes the cage and nothing. Mark then points towards the door and breaks the chain. Now, this is kind of an infamous situation that happened here because the cage, I guess, was a legit gimmick padlock shut when it wasn't supposed to be. So for the live crowd, this took forever for Mark Henry to shoot, break the cage door off of its hinge, showing his incredible strength. But for the edited version, the television version we see, it's edited down significantly. Mark ends up getting into the cage. He sends the door into the ring. He demolishes Batista, press slamming him into the cage, and then he uses the door to ram it into Rey and Batista. Thought this made Mark Henry look like a monster, to be honest. And then Eminem's able to get the pin, so they get the win. So overall, I thought this was a really good match. It served its purpose perfectly. Unique spots. All four guys look good. You had Eminem being the heels for sure, but being elevated in that they're able to hang with the world champion and his little buddy and Rey Mysterio. Rey Mysterio took some nasty bumps, had some high flying moves, and Batista looked like a monster, and then his challenger looked like an even bigger monster when Mark Henry came out and broke open the cage. So overall, 3 3/4 star, good start to SmackDown. I actually really enjoyed this show, and I mean, it's kind of some unconventional, certainly type programs going on with Henry versus Batista. Doesn't seem that intriguing, and Boogeyman and JBL, of course, is stupid, but it does feel very different. It feels like they're trying different stuff heading into the Royal Rumble. So I'm here with them, and I'm interested to see where everything goes. So I'd give this SmackDown a thumbs up for sure. Now let's transition over into Impact Land. This was Impact, still airing on Saturday nights. This was the January 7th, 2006 edition of Impact. We start things off with a 3D squash. Nothing interesting there. Just Bubba calls the TNA titles the most prestigious titles in the history of the business, which I had a chuckle at. And then he says he'd give up all 18 previous tag title runs he's had to hold these titles once. Said it will separate them from every other team, including the Road Warriors, if they win the tag titles at the pay-per-view. And then we hear that the man called Sting is coming in at Final Resolution. So Sting was entering the promotion at this time. I guess I should give my brief history of TNA. I've never been a regular TNA viewer. By this point in time in my fandom, I wasn't even a regular WWE viewer, as I mentioned in the first show, so I certainly was not watching much TNA. If I was watching TV or wrestling on my TV, it was either Ring of Honor, other indies, or Japan. So I'm very unfamiliar with all this stuff. I don't know the history, lineage, etc. of TNA. So we're on this journey together. Sanjay Dutt, he starts us off. LAX has a nice job, and then they are squashing people as well. And then we also get Larry Zbyszko. He's backstage and ends up getting invaded by the Generation Next trio of Alex Shelley, Austin Aries, and Roderick Strong. Larry says he had to do something when he was his age, and all these guys do is complain, and they're reminding him of his wife. And then Jerry Lynn ends up coming in and tells them not to worry about the match coming up, that they got it all covered. So there we go. Then we get, I thought this was just awful. So, I mean, this Impact was, it had a couple of bright spots, but overall it was kind of a chore to even scrub through. But Bobby Roode and Rod Killings have three different matches, and it's just the common stuff where Rod Killings wins quickly twice, and then finally on the third match, Bobby Roode gets the cheap victory and ends up winning. And as I talked about just previously with the Eminem versus Rey and Batista cage match, where everybody looked strong, this was a case where everybody looked weak. I thought everybody looked pretty terrible here. Bobby Roode doesn't look like a clever heel because it took him three times to beat this guy. Ron Killings seems like an idiot and that he continues to just agree to these matchups. And overall, this was about a 15-minute segment with 3 minutes of actual wrestling. So it's just insanely drawn out and was just really derailed the show, because it happened kind of right dab in the middle of the show and brought the show to a screeching halt. So that was disappointing. Samoa Joe gives an X Division promo. Joe says he doesn't know what Daniels is trying to prove, but there's a thin line between brave and stupid, and that gets crossed when he enters the ring with Joe, and Joe is going to make him bleed and then end his career. Shane Douglas is conducting this interview, and he also asked Joe about Sting, and Joe just kind of no-sells that and walks away. So Definitely Samoa Joe had a ton of presence. He didn't feel like kind of a WWE cast off, which 3D did during this show. And to me, certainly him and the Generation X group of Aries Strong and Shelley felt like the guys that they needed to be building this promotion around, that they really need to be champion within the promotion. So I hope that comes to fruition. I know there's a lot of Joe versus Sting interaction coming up. We'll see how credible they make Joe look going forward. But as a first step, I thought this was really well done. Then we get certainly the in-ring highlight of the show, as it's Austin Aries, Roderick Strong, Alex Shelley versus Christopher Daniels, Chris Sabin, and AJ Styles. Just a really tasty looking trios match on paper. We learned that AJ Styles versus Hiroshi Tanahashi has been added to Final Resolution. Mike Tenay says that match will be off the charts, and they kind of present Tanahashi as like this high flyer. Almost like that he was a Jushin Liger protege. I don't know if it was based off of the High Fly Flow. But, I mean, he does do the frog splash and the crossbody to the outside. But Tanahashi isn't exactly a luchador out there doing 450s or shooting star presses. So I thought that was an odd way to present Tanahashi as coming in for this pay-per-view match versus AJ Styles. The members of what will be Motor City Machine Guns start us off, as it's Shelley versus Sabin. Good action between these two. Shelley has the crotch claw, and West is just appalled at that. I really enjoy Don West on commentary, as somebody that's been watching a lot of old WCW footage, as you know, old JCP stuff. It's refreshing to hear David Crockett. I love his enthusiasm, and I think that Don West, in many ways, was his spiritual successor, as he kind of carries that enthusiasm along. And the good thing about Don West is he actually calls most of the moves correctly. I don't think he's annoying at all. And at this point in time, we'd had like Mark Madden and just kind of a run of annoying stuff. King was certainly on the downcline. Coach on Raw can be certainly grating and annoying, so it's refreshing to hear Don West and even Taz on SmackDown. I think they are clearly the two best color commentators we have going currently on the U.S. wrestling scene. Strong gets the tag in, he eats a Rana. Daniels is in now, and then ends up getting the heat on AJ Styles once he gets tagged in. He gets worked over. Generation X, I thought, does a great job constantly tagging in and out, doing unique but impressive moves. Awesome catapult into the sick kick, and then Aries does a senton in. Aries hits a big drop kick in the corner. Crowd's really hot for this match. Styles makes his comeback, ends up hitting the Pele kick, and then he gets the hot tag to Sabin and Daniels, and they do stereo suicide dives. West is just losing his mind. Big TNA chant. The Shelly Cam is set up at ringside, and Aries does a drop toe hold on Daniels into the railing. Aries then grabs a chair, but Styles is able to wipe him out, and Shelley and Sabin are inside the ring together. Strong then comes in, hits the gustbuster, and Shelley's able to get the sliced bread number two to get the pin on Sabin. So, a great sprint, really fun match. I mean, this is what TNA could be and what it needs to be. So 3.5 stars, good job there. Christian says that Sting coming to TNA means this is the place to be and the future of the business. So you have that. And then it's our big main event, which is a Jeff Jarrett interview. I am as excited as you guys. He provides his own tribute to Sting. Jarrett has an energetic surfer Sting come out. He talks about the 45-minute draw versus Flair. In 90, he became the NWA World Champion. This is Sting the early years, which is it's Eric Young dressed up as that Sting. And then in 96, we learned Sting went to the dark side. We got baseball bat-clad Sting comes out next. He points the bat at Jarrett. We got a dressed-up chicken that's behind Sting. They say the chicken's the crow. None of this is very funny. at all. Now he says, here's the sting of today, which is a baby comes out with a sting mask. And then the sting of today is in golf attire. He's a family man. And this is Monty Brown dressed up as this sting. Monty has the baby talk, which kind of made me pause. That was the only funny moment of this. And finally, after all this, Christian comes out and says they look like jackals and he saves some money on car insurance. So, a real topical 2006 joke there. And then 3D is back out and we get a big brawl schmoz to end the show, culminating in Abyss to take out 3D, and then Rhino comes out and takes out Abyss as Don West is screaming gore. So this I thought this was a pitiful segment, to be honest. Just a lot of they were basically trying to do a Sting, This Is Your Life motif, but Jarrett wasn't charismatic. The gags were lame. It didn't make sense. I get the concept that, Sting's a family man over the hill. He hasn't been in the ring in quite some time, so Jarrett will run over him, but it just took a long time to get there, and none of it was very clever or funny, so I did not like it much at all. So that gets us to our final show that we will be talking about on this episode, and it is going to be New Year's Revolution, a show I probably may have watched. I definitely watched it once before, but I don't even know when I'd have watched it. May have just been like a random afternoon once the network launched. So it was a show I'm not familiar with at all. It emanates from Albany, New York, and Joey Styles and Coach are on the call to begin because Jerry Lawler has the big match versus Gregory Helms. I thought this was had a cool set, and that's something that, like even like SummerSlam, Survivor Series, and Royal Rumble have sort of generic sets now, with a lot of the big LED lights and the big screen. I thought this was a really cool set with the Breathing Dragon. Just looked very cool with the steampunk vibe. Our first match of the night is Ric Flair versus Edge. Coach talks about how Lita would look good leaving the show with gold, so kind of foreshadowing of what was to come. Edge attacks right away and has a minute of offense in before Flair comes back with some chops. Flair makes a mistake of chasing after Lita and then gets clotheslined on the floor. Suplex on the floor as well. Edge on offense again isn't too interesting, and this match is all based on the Flair comeback. Edge is gonna be somebody I'm gonna struggle with. I can already tell throughout the year. He's somebody I've never been too fond of, and I may feel like I'm harping on him, but I just didn't think what he did here on top was very interesting at all. Flair does a dive, but. And Edge actually, I'm sorry. Edge tries to go for a dive to the floor, but gets hit with a chop from Flair. Then Flair scales the top rope, thumbs both Edge and Lita when they both try to stop him, and ends up hitting the big fist from the top for a two count. Starts going after the leg. Lita again jumps up and is able to distract Flair. And then I thought we had a cool spot as Edge gets backdropped to the floor over both Flair and Lita. Flair then hip tosses Lita into the ring, puts her in the figure four, but Edge has the briefcase, smashes Flair with that to get the DQ. Flair gives a play job, of course, because he's Ric Flair in 2006, and Edge continues to beat down. So a decent enough match, but you can tell this was just a setup of something that was going to happen later, and this felt like this was going to be the major angle that Edge was involved in for this show. So it seemed a little disruptive at the beginning, but at the end it worked out. But as you're watching it live, it seemed like, oh wow, that's it after all the hype job for this. Then we get a real weird interview where Todd Grisham interviews Kurt Angle. He hopes the U.S. loses the war in Iraq. He says the greatest country in the world is France. He's not too fond of black people. He insults Jesus. And then he comes around and says, no matter what, these people will cheer him. So they're definitely trying to get Angle booed, and it just is not working out, as we'll see in the Elimination Chamber when he gets a huge reaction. That leads us into our second match of the night, which is Trish Stratus versus Mickey James for the women's title. And this is probably the most anticipatory women's match that I can think of, maybe in history up to this point. Joey almost says as much on commentary, and he seems really fired up for the match overall. And based on what we'd seen in the build to the match, I was looking forward to it as well. So we get a handshake and a stare down to start. Mickey grabs towards Trish's boob in kind of an accidental spot, but that plays into their angle overall. They were a little sloppy here. They blow a Rana spot, but I think this is where you're able to see Trish's progression just as a wrestler from where she started, because she really covers for it well. And it kind of shows that she's now all of a sudden became somewhat of a ring general. Stratosphere is gone for by Trish, but Mickey's able to counter that. They go to the outside, back inside. The Stratosphere is hit, but Mickey's able to kick out of that. And then Mickey hits the Stratisfaction and has a great smile on her face. She's very proud of herself for doing that. That gets a real close near fall. And then after some back and forth, Trish is able to land a chick kick to gain the win. So, a fun match. Really felt like part one of their feud. Again, with a energetic match. But for Divas action in 2006, this was one of the stronger offerings. 3 stars for that match. Maria is backstage. She interviews herself and is not funny at all, just kind of playing up her ditzy gimmick. Gregory Helms interrupts her. He comes in asking why we're wasting precious pay-per-view time on this, so basically saying what the viewer is probably saying at home. And then he says that Jerry won't be able to be out there for his creepy puppies routine because he's going to be taking a beating in his match, so... You know, thank you for that, Gregory Helms. We also see Shelton coming into the arena with his mama. His mama's here, and she's going to get Shelton a match. And then finally, Edge and Lena are doing instant access, and Edge says he's done with Flair and has bigger things on his mind tonight. So some more foreshadowing. That gets us into our third match of the night, which is Gregory Helms versus Jerry Lawler. Lawler has the advantage in the early going, outsmarting Helms. It does kind of feel hollow hearing Helms being talked about on commentary as this big upstart, as I mean, he was in 3 count in 2000 2001 in 2001. Towards the dying days of WCW, he's kind of champion the cruiserweight division and is the ace of that division, so you know, that was 5 years ago. So now him being presented as this brand new upstart just felt kind of weird and out of place and hollow, as I mentioned before. Helms comes back with a thumb in the eye. Sidewalk slam gets 2 for Gregory Helms. Helms hits 3 suplexes, and Coach has a lot of lame jokes on commentary that are racist. He says Lawler has more chins than a Hong Kong phone book. He says Lawler took on one of the wise men in his first match, so... Just some cringe-worthy commentary from Coach here. On the outside, King takes a nasty bump into the post. Helms jumps on commentary, says he's going to do King's job for him after he beats him up and wins this match. Missile drop kick from Gregory Helms gets 2, but Helms misses a charge in the corner. King drops the strap. Some good punches from Lawler, of course. He hits the fist drop. Crowd's pretty dead, I must admit, for all this. I like Jerry, but crowd was not with him on this one. Helms is able to block the first pile driver attempt, but he gets crotched on the top rope. Second rope fist drop from the King, and he ends up winning this match, which to me is just an awful decision. Feels pretty pointless. I don't know what they're going for with Gregory Helms after a finish like this. And while the match was entertaining enough, I went 2.25 stars. It just felt like really bad booking decision in having King go over and kind of burying any goodwill that you'd built up from Gregory Helms up to this point. Backstage, Trish is at WWE Instant Access. Mickey interrupts and talks about how awesome their match is. She's just on cloud nine. Trish asks her, are you aware that you actually lost the match? And Mickey says, yeah, but it was just electric when their bodies touched and they hug. And Mickey ends up sitting down at WWE Instant Access to answer some questions along with Trish. So some more good development in this feud. Still continuing to be probably one of the more interesting things going on in WWE overall, at least through the first week of 2006. Shelton's mom now for one of the most uninteresting things going on. Shelton's mom's in the back looking for some food. Big Vince, Viscera invades, and he likes what he sees with Shelton's mom. He offers her some of his lovemaking skills. Shelton's mom doesn't like any of Viscera's advances and says she will make sure Viz gets some action tonight, but it's actually going to be in the form of a match versus her son, Shelton Benjamin. So we get a big impromptu match on the pay-per-view that gets added between Shelton Benjamin and Viscera. Odd pairing, odd match, pretty pointless overall. Next, we have a match that I talked about in the first show. I was unsure how good it'd be or whether I was looking forward to it or not. But it's Triple H versus the Big Show. And Big Show starts out strong. He's using his size to his advantage, and he punches the post accidentally. That allows Triple H to take over. He starts going after the cast. Big Show again has that huge cast on to start this match, but Triple H is relentless in going after that cast. He ends up ripping it off, and he slams the fist against the steps and is mocking Big Show. He jumps off the second rope, and Big Show's able to punch him with the other fist. Ref gets bumped. Triple H gets the sledgehammer. Show chops the handle in half with the bad hand and winces in pain, like the sledgehammer completely breaks in half. That was cool looking. On the outside, Triple H is able to use the steps and a chair, and he tries to hit the head, but Show hits a spear to stop that. Inside, Show goes for the choke slam, but Triple H is able to find one of the pieces of the sledgehammer, hit Big Show with that. Show has a great sell job for that, and then the pedigree. And the ref is able to recover to secure the pinfall win for Triple H. Thought this was kind of a shockingly good match, grounded in psychology, really well worked. I was impressed with this, honestly. I mean, I think it lived and died on Big Show's selling, but I didn't think Triple H was too egregious. And what he did as well is kind of played a his classic heel role well, and went after the arm. Wasn't one of these kind of sympathetic heels that played to the crowd, which he saw parts of in his promo on Raw. So he did a good job here in making sure that Big Show had all the correct babyface heat. And just overall, really good match. 3.25 stars, and something that, on paper with them two, it could have been atrocious, but it ended up being good. I think it's a little bit of a hidden gem, if you haven't watched this one, to seek out on the show. Chris Masters and Carlito are backstage. They're discussing their own agenda for the Elimination Chamber. And this is where this show kind of derails. Like, up to this point, and I will say overall, like, it's kind of tough watching these shows back because, I mean, obviously I'm just watching this on the network. I'm watching it leisurely at night, and I'll just say for this show overall, I mean, I found this to be a pretty enjoyable show. And one thing that I'm doing is listening to a lot of Figure Four Daily and Brian and Vinny shows from this era, and also reading reviews that I could find, pay-per-view reviews for this. And Meltzer and The Observer basically panned the show. Brian and Vinny gave pretty much a negative review. Vinny's best half-hearted praise for the show was that it was better than he thought most people thought it was, and that kind of struck me because, I mean, while I don't think this is a great pay-per-view by any means, I think once we get to the conclusion, you'll see that I thought there was at least some good many good things on this pay-per-view. But that's coming from this, standpoint of me watching it on the network. Like, I wasn't paying $40 for this show on pay-per-view, so that has to be, I think, played into the equation to a degree. And I think when you get to what the next two matches that we're about to discuss, you really see that you had kind of a 40-minute, 45-minute just slog of really non-pay-per-view worthy filler that was on this show. And I can see if I had paid for this show at my home or watching it in real time, being pretty negative on this. Whereas nowadays, I just like, let me just power through it. And you could even skip it altogether and miss nothing. So that's just an interesting concept, and it's all kind of in the eye of the beholder and kind of the context of how you're watching the show as to how favorable you are to the show at certain points. So the match is Viscera versus Shelton Benjamin. Benjamin's avoiding Viscera with his speed, but he ends up getting caught. Viscera sends him to the outside. Benjamin's mom gets in front of Shelton Benjamin to protect him. Shelton goes after the leg of Viscera, keeps chopping him down. Viscera just shrugs him off, and Shelton's mom's constantly yelling on the outside, "Come on, baby!" It's pretty grating. I'm not a fan of Shelton Benjamin's mom with two appearances. Viscera regains the advantage, hits an elbow for two count. I actually thought Vic Vince was selling the leg decently here. He's limping around and showing some effects from the leg work that Shelton was doing. Vince goes for a splash and then violates Shelton to his mom's dismay. Vince goes for the final big splash. That misses. Shelton hits an enziguri kick. That gets the win. So weak finish overall with just the enziguri kick that didn't hit too flush. And overall, I mean, this was certainly a pay-per-view match. I mean, certainly a Raw match that was by no means pay-per-view quality. Star and a half there. Shawn and Vince meet up. Basically continuing their feud. Vince wishes him good luck. Not really, but just talking crap and trying to goad him for the big elimination chamber. King is back on commentary for the Bra and Panties, so Gregory Helms was incorrect. And to be honest, I'm not going to go over this. It's a Bra and Panties gauntlet. I thought it was just complete shit. I went a quarter star for the whole thing. It was way too drawn out. The highlight is Moolah and Mae Young coming out and teasing that they strip down. Mae ends up getting down into her bra and panties. Just a waste of time. Really bad. And it even looks worse than concept of the show because you just had a women's match that, I mean, yes, there is lesbian overtones with that angle, so it's not exactly the most competitive sports build for a female match that you ever seen, but it was just a lot better in-ring action, and it's surrounded by at least some sort of an angle that's not just basically TNA and that the women are being presented as eye candy. So this was terrible. I'm sure it's terrible then. I think it's even worse in retrospect. So let's quickly move past that to our big main event, the Elimination Chamber. Shawn Michaels and John Cena start off a really hot start. They have good chemistry together right away. Crowd's booing John heavily, which is not a surprise, especially when he gains the advantage. And the end of the sequence actually sees John getting some nice kicks in the corner that Shawn's taking some big bumps for, and the crowd's really on top of Cena about that. Carlito is the third person in, and he attacks Cena to the crowd's delight. Nice drop kick and senton on the steel for HBK. I thought Carlito looked good here. Nice strikes, some thudding chops. I was really impressed with him. But HBK and Cena are able to join together. They take over to end that segment. And then our fourth person into the match is Kurt Angle. Excuse me. He comes in like a man possessed. He gives all three German suplexes multiple times. Michaels gets backdropped onto the steel. Carlito takes an awkward bump onto the steel too. And then he catapults HBK into the chamber, and Sean does a gnarly blade job kind of on the side of his face. Looked really cool. Looked really nasty, actually, too. And then Carlito gets locked in the ankle lock and hangs on until the fifth person in the match, Chris Masters, is able to come in and break it up. So, as we'll talk about with this Elimination Chamber, I thought this was a very good match. It is a match that has its flaws. Probably some of the biggest flaws is this was an Elimination Chamber match that had a lot of breaking up of submissions or pins, and sometimes they made logical sense, but other times they did. I mean, here it was a little fringy. I mean, if Masters and Carlito are wanting to team up to dominate the chamber themselves, I mean, it makes sense for him to rush in and try to save Carlito from the ankle lock, but we'll get to more of that later. Masterpiece, I thought, looked good with the power slam with Cena, and he actually gets a really nice looking press slam on Shawn Michaels. I thought they did a good job in this match of when everybody came in, they hit some signature spots, almost Royal Rumble style. They were given a good showcase flurry, and then were able to kind of wind down into the match with the flow of that. Cena is then placed in the ankle lock. And this was one of the submission breakups that I didn't like. So we got our first elimination as Sean hits the sweet chin music on Angle. It was a fun looking spot as Sean kind of came out of nowhere. It was filmed really good. He hit the sweet chin music flush and he pins Angle to eliminate him. Now I liked the way it looked, but I didn't like the execution because, you know, Sean's trying to do a sneak attack on Angle. That's fine, but Cena's on the verge of tapping out, and it's like, could Sean not have done the sweet chin music one split second after Cena taps out, his ankle's going to break the hold? It just felt like, why would he break that up to do that? So, I mean, it did lead to elimination, so I can kind of see that as a logic reasoning for it, but, you know, just let Cena tap out and then hit it. And then I thought the match bogged down a little bit. It's a tag structure for a bit with Carlito Masters working over the faces. Kane comes in. He gets a chance to shine, but I didn't think his power or explosiveness were as good as Angle or even the Masterpiece. Kane gets a clothesline from the top, chokeslam to Shawn Michaels and Cena. Cena chokeslam, gets a big pop from the crowd. Chris Masters tries to attempt the master lock on Kane, but is unable to hook it together. But Carlito is able to get an awkward backstabber. Kane sits up out of that. Double DDT. Kane is down for a little bit longer, but sits up again. But then Masters power slams Carlito on top of Kane. Both pile on top to eliminate him. So an interesting decision there, but kind of unsure whether that was a good decision or not. So now Michaels gets worked over. He delivers a comeback against Chris Masters and Carlito. Elbow drop to Cena. We get some more shivering over emoting from Sean Selling. Both Cena and Sean struggle to get up to their feet. Sean hits the sweet chin music, but Carlito and Masters stop him. Again, I thought this wasn't smart at all because I understand you want B to happen, but let A happen first. Carlito is able to hit a twisting DDT. Out goes Shawn Michaels, but when Masters covers Cena, he's able to barely kick out. Coach is shocked that this is the final three, and I gotta say, probably watching this live, most of the crowd would have been shocked too. Cena then does the Superman comeback, suplexes, clothesline, five knuckle shuffles. He goes for the FU, but Masters grabs him, throws him to the outside. Masters hits Cena with a DDT on the steel, and I think he's really looked good at this match. His offense has looked solid. He's been in position. He hasn't looked awkward at all. And I think just watching this match, he looks poised to be a main event star going forward. Cena is busted open now, and they send Cena into the Elimination Chamber again. Master locked his hook, but Carlito and Masters had worked so well together the entire match, and now Carlito double-crosses Masters, low-blows him, rolls him up to eliminate him, and then Cena takes advantage by immediately rolling up Carlito to get the pinfall. So a very good match with some logic gaps. Most of the finishes were a little suspect, and overall went 3 3/4 stars here. Crowds kind of doesn't know what to think, and immediately Vince's music, No Chance in Hell, fires up. Vince says the night is not over, and to raise the cage up, and then he announces that Edge is cashing in his Money in the Bank briefcase. Edge comes down, and you know, I gotta be honest again, this may be me harping too much on Edge, but I honestly didn't think the reaction to Edge cashing in was electric as some people maybe remember it being. The crowd has a little bit of a murmur, but it certainly didn't feel like when, like, Dolph Ziggler or some of the other cash-ins that I've seen, even when The Miz cashes in 2010, I thought that was more electric than what we had here. Cena gets up to his feet, the bell rings, Edge punches away, a few pinfalls and kick out, and then Edge hits the spear. Cena barely kicks out of that. Kind of a weird fan reaction to that, where you actually start to get some cheers for Cena, but then Edge is pissed, hits another spear, wins the title. And overall, I don't know. I mean, you certainly had some people going nuts, as you could see, and you had some kind of shot faces, but I don't know. I don't know. I was left a little flat, and I kind of expected it to at least be this big career-defining moment for Edge, and I didn't feel that, so we'll see if I feel that going forward, but I didn't feel that now. Now, as the rating of this quick little match, you know, normally from a rating standpoint, before I'd kind of just be a quarter star, but I've actually been thinking more about this, and I'm thinking if I'm doing a match that's very important significantly, or, you know, is a big deal, I'm on rated appropriately. So I ended up going 3 stars for this 1 minute match, just based almost exclusively on importance alone. But again, I think this is one to go back and watch, and maybe people would disagree with me, but I just didn't see it as this huge pop or this huge, like, dastardly shock crowd reaction. Either way, I kind of just felt like the crowd overall was kind of like, that's different, and then exited towards the streets, so to speak. So overall, as I said, kind of a mixed bag pay-per-view, but it has a 3 3/4 star match, it has a shockingly good Triple H versus Big Show match, and then the women's match is good as well. So I thought it was a solid watch. I mean, it's kind of like a C+ pay-per-view in the grand scheme of things, but not too bad to sit down for 2.5 hours and watch it to waste your time. So before I leave, I wanted to real quickly give a shout out to one match that happened on a PWG show that I watched, and this was on January 7th. The name of the show is Cruisin' for a Bruisin', and it was Davey Richards and Super Dragon versus the tag team of Cape Fear, which is Quicksilver and El Generico. This was the best match I watched this week. Four stars, very high 4-star range. It's a long match, it's about 35 minutes, but just a great tag match with Super Dragon being a complete prick, Davey Richards learning to be a complete prick, and Generico and Quicksilver are great sympathetic baby faces. So that concludes the first week in the Fighting Spirit of 06. Please join us next week where we will have a TNA pay-per-view. We will have some more Raw and SmackDown fallout, and then we will see what happens to our dear friend, Dave Bautista. This is Chad Campbell, signing off.